Back when I was about 17, I stayed behind after school with a few mates to use the Sixth Form's LAN network to get a big Counter-Strike game going. This was back before I had a decent enough internet connection or a decent enough computer to actually play online games at home, so you can imagine I had an absolute ball. I mean, we all did, and we stayed so late that the caretakers had to physically start switching all the computers off all the mains in order to get us to leave. Since it was like November, it was actually dark by the time we were all on our way home, and the only light I had to guide my way was the glow from the orange street lamps at the side of the road. But all of a sudden, as I'm walking down the old half-mile-long street I used to live on, all the lights in the street just go out at once. It was so alarming that it literally stopped me in my tracks, and I find myself looking around to notice that all the lights in the nearby houses were off too. The power grid in the city I live in is pretty reliable, and that was the first time anything like that had happened, so naturally I'm a bit freaked out. I try calling a friend of mine to see if the power is out in their neighborhood too, but my phone won't work. I just keep getting this robot voice saying, "Your call could not be connected. Please hang up and try again." So, the phones are out, the lights are out, my parents aren't home yet, and I've got a voice in the back of my head that says World War III is about to start. I am way too anxious just to sit at home in the dark, both literally and figuratively, so I go out into the street and start walking over to where my friend lived, same one I tried to call. Other people have come out of the houses too, neighbors talking to one another, wondering what's going on. It was actually really freaky how dark it was outside. Like it's a thing that very few of us in the West ever get to see, an urban landscape completely plunged into darkness. There was a tension in the air, you could feel it, and without a working phone to get in touch with anyone or find out what was going on, that tension just got heavier and heavier. Literally nowhere had power. I walked like 30 minutes over to my mate's house, with the only flickers of light being from hand torches and candles. You could see better around main roads thanks to car headlights, but it was chaos without traffic lights, and whole intersections were jammed up with cars trying to maneuver around each other. I made it to my mate's house, and obviously there was no power there either. Only at a time when it was much safer to do so. We didn't stay inside, and I've always thought it was weird how we gravitated back to the only real source of light. Pretty much everyone else did too, and in the course of walking up and down the car-clogged main roads, we just sort of bumped into the rest of our little friend group. And what started as quite an unnerving experience morphed into something supremely exciting. We had no idea when the power was coming back on, or why it had even gone out in the first place. And after a few hours of almost complete darkness, even the grown-ups around us started to openly wonder if it would come back anytime soon. Things started to take on a distinctly apocalyptic vibe. But we were teenage boys, and we were together. We had that youthful air of invincibility that made us think that we could take on anything. It was actually quite euphoric, but that feeling wasn't to last. You see, we weren't the only people to detect a hint of tension in the air, and where other people saw potential chaos and danger, others saw opportunity. The first hint of it came when we saw three lads bolting out of a corner shop, quickly followed by the pursuing owner who barked at them that he'd call the police. Obviously, they'd taken advantage of the darkness to steal from him, and that was the first time it really registered with us just how vulnerable we all were at such a time. No power meant no light, but it also meant no alarm systems, no CCTV cameras, with the police being unable to respond to calls because of the terrible traffic. We started to see things like shop owners with baseball bats and iron bars in their hands, pulling down shutters over their windows, or drivers who'd have to be physically separated from one another to keep them from fighting. It was a bad scene, and it was foolish of us to stick around on the off chance that anything got particularly heated. To me, my mates decided to retreat to this primary school car park we used to skate on, one that was tucked away near the river and surrounded by trees. Maybe if it wasn't for the power cut, we'd have understood why that might be a bad idea, but whether it was the pitch darkness or just this general lack of awareness, we had no idea what was coming. And dear God, do I wish we had. So we were hanging around the car park, which was normally lit by a few lampposts dotted around, but Obviously, on that night, it's near pitch darkness. The only light was coming from the moon or from our phone screens, which in like 2005 were not particularly bright. Literally anything could have snuck up on us if it was quiet enough. We had absolutely zero spatial awareness, which is what made the events that followed all the more terrifying. At first, one of us is all like, "Shh, did you hear that?" Everyone freezes, listening out for whatever our mate had heard, but there's just silence. A little while later, this happens again, and that time our apparently paranoid friend was insistent that he heard something in the trees nearby. But we just dismiss his fears as nothing but an attempt at a prank. So when one of us was grabbed by someone looking to put them in a chokehold, we all just thought it was another one of our number messing around. And I'll never forget the fear in the air when we suddenly realized that we were not alone anymore. That whoever had done the grabbing was a total stranger who must have just materialized from basically nowhere. One of us tried to wrestle the stranger off of our friend, but they seemed to be thrown to the ground by some unseen force. It was hideously confusing. Where these people were coming from and why they were doing it was a complete mystery. But I knew one thing for definite. We were under attack. I'm not even entirely sure what happened after that. I'm pretty sure we were outnumbered because I can remember at least two people kicking me after I was floored by a punch to the face. It seemed to last for ages too, and it only stopped when I heard two voices near me saying something like, "Oh, I think he's dead." "What? He's not moving. I think he's died. God, let's get out of here, man." And then the kicking stops. I hear hurried footfalls, and then suddenly everything is quiet. I should have maybe felt some degree of relief that the attack had stopped, but that guy's words just rattled around my skull. He died. I look up from tucking my head into my chest and shielding it with my arms and see a few dark shapes either crawling or limping towards another dark shape that was lying motionless on the concrete. That was one of the worst moments of my life, thinking I was looking at the dead body of one of my closest friends. But thankfully, he wasn't dead. He wasn't exactly okay, but he wasn't dead. He must have taken a pretty heavy hit because he was completely knocked out cold. Like one of those bad knockouts too, when the person is groggy when they wake up. It was still really worrying, but Jesus, the pure relief I felt when he moved and groaned for the first time. None of us were hurt too bad, just a few black eyes and some busted lips. And despite the fact that we were concerned that the guy who got knocked out might have had a concussion, he didn't complain of feeling nauseous or dizzy over the next couple of days. In the end, we all just limped home, hoping the power would stay off so we wouldn't have to go to school the next day sporting black eyes and lip scabs. But the power did come back on, so we didn't even get the day off. My big takeaway from the night of the blackout wasn't so much how much it sucked being ambushed like that. It was something entirely more frightening. I had seen with my own eyes the brittle threads that hold society together don't need much pressure before they're stretching to breaking point. And all it takes is a little power outage before we're all feeling that pressure. But some of us feel something else too, and for some, the darkness brings out a primal, predatory desire to hunt and victimize the same people we call neighbors. And it's those kinds of people, the monsters in human meat suits, that we fell victim to that night. I live in a place called Beddington here in Maine. It's the least populated part of the state, which probably makes it one of the least populated areas in the country. And with a population of just over 50 people, we're the very definition of a one-stop light kind of town. We all live pretty spaced out too. Nearest neighbor on my right side is about a mile away. Nearest neighbor on my left side is more like 3 miles away. The sense of community here is really strong, but out here you really are alone, in most senses of the word. And that kind of isolation is made all the more obvious whenever there's a power cut. It's only happened like twice for the entire time I've been living out here, and one time it was only for about an hour. The second time, it must have been a serious fault down at whatever power station feeds us juice because the power was out all night. And I don't just remember that night because I couldn't watch the Pats play ball. it's burned in my memory for other reasons too. So like I said, second ever power cut, but thanks to the experience I gained from the first time around, I fare a little better that time. I have candles stored away, I have dynamo flashlights, I even got a battery-powered hot plate that would be good for a few uses, even if it did burn through the batteries. So instead of panicking and bumping into stuff in the dark, that time I just make myself comfortable, pick up a good book, and sit down to ride it out on the couch. Now it's at this point that I should bring up my dog, Teddy. Teddy got his name because my grown-up daughter thought he looks like a teddy bear, which he kinda does. And given his considerably superior senses, the power cuts never seemed to bother Teddy none. Teddy never bumped into furniture or got spooked at every little noise or shadow. Teddy just stayed curled up by the log fire and warmed his bones. As I curl myself up, Ted gives me this look at one point as if to say, "See, now you get it, old man. Just relax and take a load off. Power will come back when it's good and ready to." But Teddy didn't stay so relaxed for long, and neither did I. A couple of hours go by, and I'm so engrossed by the book I was reading that when Teddy started to bark, it almost scared me out of my wits. You see, Teddy never barked at anything, even when he saw squirrels or raccoons. He just sort of looked at me like, "What are you going to do about them, they're critters, old man?" Nothing fazed him ever, so to even hear him yapping like that in the first place was pretty unusual. Then that got me wondering what could possibly freak him out enough to make him bark. I'm all like, "What is it, boy? What are you smelling?" But Ted just gets up, walks over towards the door to the hallway, and starts growling all low in between barks. And as I'm sitting there watching him, I get this real bad feeling in the pit of my stomach. This is the first time I'd ever seen him acting like that, downright aggressive and territorial. Now, as much as I respect the Second Amendment, I don't really believe in keeping a gun in the house. I hate the things, always have. And long story short, I lost a relative in a shooting accident when I was a kid. Now, just being around a pistol makes me kind of sweat and anxious. But what I do have on hand for some defense is an old recurve bow I used for hunting. Not exactly ideal to stop a burglar, but it was better than nothing. I must have looked like an old, worn-out Comanche warrior creeping through my living room with a freaking bow and arrow with only fire light to see what was going on. But I sure didn't feel like one. I just turned 55. I was a grown man. But something about all that darkness and being so isolated made me feel like a scared kid. Best case scenario, Teddy had picked up the smell of a bear or a lynx in the wild. One that was still way off in the distance. Worst case could be something considerably worse. When I take a peek out from the house through the window of my office, Teddy follows, jumping on the windowsill and barking a few times after sniffing the air. Whatever he was smelling, I sure wasn't seeing it. So after peering into the darkness for a minute or so, I just take Ted back into the TV room where he stopped his barking. All was quiet again, so I carried on with my reading. About an hour later, the same thing happens all over again. Teddy jumps up from the rug, barking up a storm, only this time he seems considerably more aggressive. He bounds over to the door of the TV room, scratching at the handle and growling in a way that actually kind of frightened me. Like I said, I've never seen Teddy act like that, like he was a completely different dog. When I let him out of the TV room, Teddy ran through the open door of the kitchen and started barking and scratching at the back door. I mean, he was going back there, and there was no way I was about to let him go outside. The mood he was in, he'd probably run off as fast as he could and get up getting himself lost. And besides that, I felt strangely safer with Ted around. He stopped barking for a second, sniffed the air, and then bolted back into the TV room, where he started barking even louder at the glass patio doors that led to the backyard. I follow him all like, "Get him, boy. Tear him up." But when I catch a glimpse of the sliding glass doors, I'd swear I saw something moving in the shadows outside. I couldn't even tell you what I saw. It was nothing more than a flash of movement, but it was obvious enough for me to grab that recurve bow that I propped up against the couch. I was so scared that I could barely line the arrow up with the drawstring. Ted was going crazy at this point, acting like he was fixing to smash through the glass windows and chase down whatever he could smell. And like I said, It might even have been just the way the firelight reflected on the glass, but I wasn't willing to roll the dice on something being out there. Then suddenly, Ted stops barking again. I figured it's because he's lost the scent or something, because he shut up entirely and stops pawing at the glass in the back doors. But then he went and did the weirdest thing. He backs off from the doors, stands in front of me, shaking on all fours, and takes a pee right there on the carpet. He hadn't done anything like that since he was a puppy. Ted was hardcore house trained. It definitely wasn't out of fear of some black bear either. Ted's been in the same area as those ever since he was a pup, and unless he actually saw one, I can't imagine that he'd freak out the way he did. But the fact remains that animals like dogs have been known to just go to the bathroom on themselves whenever a much larger predator is in the area. Only I can't imagine how much larger it'd have been to make Ted forget his house training. After that, he almost was completely silent, just the occasional whimper while I stood there with the flashlight, just waiting for the mother of all black bears to come smashing through my back windows. At least I hoped it was nothing but a black bear. I understand those animals, but I didn't understand what was going on during that power out at all, and it just about scared the life out of me. But by far the worst part of the experience was when I actually heard something in the little side walkway to my house. See, there's a little gravel path where my wife used to grow vegetables, right around the side of my house, and I swear to the Almighty that I heard two distinct crunches on the gravel, right as I'm staring out into the darkness for like the 100th time. That's when I started to call out. I know you're there, and I'm armed. Now you better get out of here. I listened again, and for the next few minutes there was nothing but silence. And then just when I started to think that I'd just imagined the whole thing, I heard it again, clear as day. Footsteps on the gravel. That time I was closer, and I'd heard people walk up and down that gravel path 100 times over the years, so I'm telling you right now, whatever was outside my house that night was way, way bigger than a person. If it was a black bear, it must have been the biggest one on the entire East Coast. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't a bear or something. Maybe it was just a big old dog that got lost and took to wandering into my yard. But like I said, it was big. Really big. And you can bet your bottom that I came shaking like a crapping dog as I heard its footsteps getting quieter and quieter as it made its way off my property. I didn't hear nothing for the rest of the night. Ted didn't bark again, but it seemed like he'd thrown in the towel with that line of defense anyway. But I didn't hear nothing outside, and evidently nothing broke into the house, otherwise I'd be rambling on about it. It's just kind of surreal to me that one of the scariest experiences in my life comes across like a second-rate campfire tale. I don't scare easy, and what happened during that blackout scared the living hell out of me. I just hope whatever that thing was, whether it was a bear or the Turner beast or something else entirely, stays well away from my property in the future, because it'd take far more than just a few arrows to take down a beast as big as that. Just over a year ago in October 2019, some real scary stuff went down and I thought I was going to lose my life. I live with my mom in California, just out of Sacramento, and I love her a whole lot because she works really hard to take care of me. I'm much better right now, but a year ago I really wasn't doing so good, and I was dependent on an oxygen mask for my breathing. It wasn't like a face mask or anything, it was pretty discreet. I wore what's called a nasal cannula, which is like the little clear plastic tube that runs up your nose. It was quite uncomfortable at first, but you get used to anything after a while. Anyway, so I spend most of my time hooked up to a PPAP machine, and it was super important that it stayed switched on at all times, or I might suffocate. But if it ever did switch off or break for any reason, I could just switch over to my battery-powered oxygen tank, and voila, tragic death avoided. The system was flawlessly safe, or so I was led to believe. Because what that system doesn't take into account is that, all of a sudden, PG&E might decide that it's going to switch the power off to my house. I wake up in the middle of the night feeling like I'm about to have a full-on anxiety attack, and it only takes me about a second before I realize that I can't breathe. I brought a hand to my face and felt that my nasal cannula was still in my nostrils, but when I rolled over in bed, I saw my PPAP machine was dark. Now, under any other circumstances, I could just unplug from the machine, walk into the spare bedroom, and plug into the battery-powered oxygen tank. But since I was so tired and whatever had happened to cut the power had happened when I was asleep, I'd lost vulnerable time to make the transition. So picture the scene. I feel like I'm about to pass out. I can't see a thing because it's dark, and I have to make it all the way across the hall and into the spare room when I feel like I can't make it 3 steps in front of me. It was the most scared I'd ever been in my life. I had a matter of seconds to get to the battery tank. I'm making all these wheezing sounds, and I can just feel myself getting weaker and weaker as I made it out of my bedroom and took my first steps into the hallway. I only make it a few paces before I just feel my knees buckling underneath me. I try to crawl, but I just can't. And that's about all I remember until the next thing I know, I'm sucking air through the cannula like a crazy person, coughing and sputtering with my mom's voice in my ear. I must have made a whole bunch of noise on the way out of my bedroom, and thank God too, because it woke my mom up. She must have found me lying there, figured out what the deal was, then just dragged me far enough toward the spare bedroom that she could plug in my oxygen tube. I just remember lying there, taking these huge, deep breaths until I felt sort of okay again, but that only lasted a moment or two, until the memory of that fear came rushing back to me and I just burst into tears. We had to drive to the hospital to get me looked over by a doctor. You can get some nasty health complications if you're deprived of oxygen like that, and it's not just the obvious stuff either. Like it can cause blood clots in your arteries from the strain, and those can be pretty fatal. But yeah, I got checked over and although I was pretty shaken up, I was otherwise okay. But then the whole thing comes out about the blackouts, and that caused a lot of controversy. For those that don't know, here in California it was discovered that some equipment owned by a bunch of electrical companies was causing forest fires. There was this huge fire where almost 100 people died, and the fire department found it was started by a power line that had fallen over. Then companies then catch a ton of crap from the federal government, and as a result, they basically made the decision to just cut power off to a bunch of people's homes during wildfire season. Unfortunately for us, our home was one of them. We got lucky though. Like one guy actually died because he was on home life support or something. The power went off and boom, massive organ failure. The power cuts affected other stuff too, like nebulizers, dialysis machines, refrigerators that kept insulin fresh. Power companies said they'd been warning people for months about it and they should make preparations. But I don't remember hearing anything about it. But yeah, scariest moment of my life right there. Straight up thinking that I was gonna die. But like so many times before in my life, my mom was there to stop me from slipping away.
I started my new job at Will Rogers Airport. I say new job, but I was really just moved to a different airline and working on the same ramp agent position. Now I have to tell you that I have a crippling fear of heights. And my least favorite part of being ramp agent is when I have to climb in a cargo bin or rear loading plane because it's about 20 feet above the ground. The first thing is it was raining. Not just light raining, but pouring rain with a few scattered lightning flashes and random power surges. Every now and then, we have dead bodies transported in the cargo bins. This was one of those occasions, and tonight was my lucky night apparently because my manager told me I was throwing this plane. Throwing mean, I was pulling the cargo out of the bin. It was the last plane for the night, and wasn't very much cargo besides the body. My coworker John pulled the ramp loader to the plane and raised it up so I can walk up to the conveyor belt to enter the bin. About 4 other coworkers come over with the baggage tug for the cargo. I say to everyone in a louder than normal tone because the rain was loudly smacking the metal shell of the airplane. I hope y'all are ready. I'm not trying to be out here all night, John laughed and said, "Don't worry about it. Maybe you can find a new friend in there," in reference to the bodies. I didn't think it was funny, but I chuckled and told him to shut up and let's get going. I climbed into the small and cramped space and sat in the bin as far from the human-sized white cardboard box as I could, and pulled my phone out of my pocket to select a playlist to listen to while I throw the bin. I find a good one and I start working. The conveyor belt moves at a snail's pace, and you have to wait until they scan each individual package, so I can't just throw them as fast as I want to get out of there. About 10 minutes into it, I'm getting closer and closer to this box, and my music stops playing. I've had earbuds that short out when they get wet, so in the front of my mind, I automatically assumed that the rain somehow got on it, and I just needed to shake the little water out of them. But they were bone dry. I check Spotify to see if it was a glitch or a problem with the app, and I see I have an unread text. Did I get a notification and forget in the midst of my rap fuel baggage handling? The way my phone is set up, when I get a message, it will tell you who it is from, but it won't display the message. You have to access them and read it. The message was from an unknown number, which was odd because very few people have my number. I clicked the notification and I read the message, and all it said was hi. I sent a text back and I said, who is this? My phone displayed that whoever sent the message saw mine immediately after it sent. I waited and no response. I started my playlist back up and got back to my job. Shortly after, a crash of thunder that was so loud the plane shook made me jump at first, but I quickly rationalized it and returned to work. I noticed the conveyor belt was no longer moving. I yelled to John, "What the hell is going on up there? Why did it stop?" He told me to sit tight. They're going to drop off this load. I think to myself, where else am I going to go? About 1 minute later, it got cold, like I could see my breath cold. I wrote it off as just a cold front, and I reach over for some stranger's luggage to lean on while I wait. As I look over for a bag to grab, lightning went across the sky and I saw a quick flash of a little boy, 11, maybe 12 years old, sitting on a white box, staring at me with this eerily happy smile, and his head turned slightly to the side. My heart sunk and I froze, never taking my eyes off that box for what felt like hours. I was startled by the replacement conveyor belt darting up right next to the plane. I darted to the moving conveyor, crawling as fast as I could, trying to keep my balance and panic at the same time. I hit the ground and looked at John and said, "Nope, I'm done. You're gonna have to go in there." I didn't want to explain exactly what I saw, but John knew something scared me, so he asked me what was wrong and who was it. I stuttered a little bit, and I walked away before I could say anything. Then I got a new text message notification that I heard loud and clear this time. It responds from an unknown sender saying, "It's your new friend."